Good morning. It is good to be with you today. Whenever your rector calls or texts me and asks if I can come and substitute while she's away, I hope my calendar is free on those dates, and because I always look forward to coming over and being with you. You are such a welcoming congregation, and it's always a pleasure to worship with you. I was fascinated by a program on NPR this week, a program that was on, of all things, minimalists. And as I understood it, minimalists are people who are downsizing everything, their living quarters, all the non-essentials that they feel take up space that they have to take care of and which they seldom, if ever, use. One man on this program who is single and lives in a condo said he gave himself a test on minimalism. His test was this. He was going to box up all of his belongings. He was very methodical, and he and a friend put on the outside everything that was in each box. All of his stuff went into a box, and they were stacked up in his living quarters. He was free to take out anything he needed. Toothbrush, here that is. Bed sheets, here they are. My shoes, there they are. Whatever he needed during the next 4 weeks, he was to take out and use. Now, the test was to see how much he got by with without, and how much he used. And what he found was he used only about 20% of what he had stored up. About 20%. And he said he really didn't miss anything. In fact, some of the things he had boxed up, he had entirely forgotten about. Forgotten that he even had them. And so the question was put to him, why this? Why minimalism? And he said for him, he was in a cycle that he felt was very destructive to body, soul, and mind. He had a healthy six-figure income. But in order to maintain that, he had to work 60 to 80 hours a week to keep that going and keep that income so that he could buy all these things which he discovered did not bring him happiness. So he decided to get out of that rat race, to cut back, to get rid of, and that's what he did, including his working hours. And he said it really wasn't that hard. And some of the things that the benefits from this were, he was able to maintain friendships and keep them going. It gave him time to read and think. It gave him time to travel. It gave him time to do the kinds of things he said, I always wanted to do, but there was never enough time because I was in the rat race. And he said one of the habits he developed as a minimalist was not accumulating stuff, but when he found that he had, he made a habit of going at least once a week to the drop-off box for Goodwill and put stuff in it. It was like a weekly offering of adding to whatever they needed in the box, thinking, I don't need that. It's not essential to my life, but it may be to somebody else. He wanted to be more relaxed. He wanted to live a life with less tension in it. There's also a TV show. It's called Tiny Homes. Have you seen that? Has anybody seen that show, Tiny Homes? This is about people who also are getting rid of really nice, spacious living quarters and purchasing a very small unit. They call them tiny homes. And the average size is something like between 200 and 400 square feet. Now, you can get a bigger one than that. Some of them, the smaller ones, you can they're on wheels. You can pull them on the back of a pickup. Larger ones, you have to hire a semi to kind of get them wherever you want them to go. There's very little storage space in those places. They have ingenious ways to storing things, but it's not a lot of room. And yet, the thing that astounds me is sometimes it's a family with children and pets moving in to this very small space. Why are these people opting for something like that? Well, the one with the family, the dog, and all that sort of thing, here they are cooped up in these small spaces. They want to be together, really know each other. And I'm sure that happens in that. But it's the reversal of the option that everybody going and spending time in their room and not a lot of communication going on as a family. Well, they wanted to support the communication elements of it. So that's what they have done. And they enjoy that. It allows them to travel. They can pack up in the summertime when school is out and take that tiny home and go wherever where they want to go to explore and see the country. They love it. Could you become a minimalist? Could you live in a tiny home? Dale, my wife, and I talked about this and have talked about it, and especially with this gospel lesson today, and our answer after thinking about it for two seconds really is no. In fact, it's no way. But it motivates us to think about our stuff. Our stuff. It motivates us, and especially as we've talked about this gospel lesson this week. Man, we went through the house yesterday. Closets, drawers, the attic, the garage. Offices, we have a stack of stuff for AMVETS on Thursday. But you know, it motivates us also to look at our bank account and see how generous we may or may not have been to organizations like Metropolitan Ministries, ECHO, that's in Brandon, and other opportunities for us to support and supply food and water and clothing and mosquito nets and all those kinds of things for people who really need them and who don't have them. In the gospel lesson today, Jesus said to two brothers, did you notice this? These brothers were fighting over inheritance. Have you ever heard of such a thing? If you haven't, go back and read yesterday's paper. A prominent family here in Tampa, they can't even bury their mother because they haven't decided how to settle everything. Wow. Well, they tried to trap Jesus in a situation like that. Jesus, will you tell my brother to include me in or whatever? And Jesus looked back at him and said, life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. He just didn't let them trap him in that argument. You see, possessions are not the issue. It's the abundance of possessions. It's being consumed by them. It is allowing them to rule our life, how we manage our time, what we do, what we spend, how we spend. Jesus goes on to tell a very interesting parable. It's the parable of a rich farmer. His crops were extremely abundant. His existing buildings, his barns, could no way hold all of his stuff. No problem. Tear them down. Build bigger ones. Let's store everything. And that is what he did. That is what he did. And then he said to himself, "I can relax now. I can eat and drink and be merry." Now, there is a backstory to this that I want to tell you about. There is a backstory that adds some meaning to what is going on here with the farmer. That farmer, like Jesus, was part of a heritage that went back many, many generations. That heritage has continued to this day, and we call it our Judeo-Christian heritage. And this heritage has a huge social component, a component with the command to be always on the lookout for the needs of others and to do everything we can to supply them with the basic needs that they are seeking. And of course, it includes food and water, clothing, shelter, and basic health provisions. In that day, there was an example of just that way of approaching the world and life. Farmers in those days, upon harvesting their crops, would leave behind in the fields and the gardens enough so that the poor could come and get them and use them. This farmer didn't do that. That tradition was called gleaning. And the unfortunates would go to those places and they would find food enough left over for them. There were laws handed down by Moses that are replete with admonitions to share the wealth God has entrusted to us as stewards, managers, rather than owners. That's a very important distinction. The commands include to care and to provide for the outcast and the needy. Now, another part of that tradition are the wonderful prophets of the Old Testament. And I want to introduce you to one, lest you may not know of him. If he lived today, I don't think we would like him. I really don't. He's pretty direct. He's kind of invade your space. He's up in your face like that. His name is Amos. Listen to what he says here. And this is from the Message, the version of the Bible in contemporary language. This is what Amos says. "Listen to this, you who walk over the weak. You treat poor people as less than nothing, who say, 'When is my next paycheck coming so I can go and live it up?' You say, 'How long till the weekend when I can go out and have a good time?' But he also says to them, 'You give little and you take much and never do an honest day's work. You exploit the poor, using them, and then when they are used up, you discard them.'" And then Amos, he doesn't spare anybody. This time he's up in the face of the wives of the movers and shakers. The wives of the movers and shakers. And he says to them, "Listen, you women, mean to the poor, cruel to the down and out, indolent and pampered, and you demand of your husbands, bring us a cool, tall drink." That ancient prophetic tradition threads its way through the Old Testament and is fulfilled in the life and ministry of Jesus. And you can hear that in the background of the story that we read today. It condemns those who hoard and refuse to share. It is even more harsh on those in positions of political, religious, and economic power who live sumptuously while others live in destitution. It is based on the belief that all of us are children of God, and as such, we are brothers and sisters to each other. The summary of the law in our prayer book in the Bible is that we love God with our whole being and our neighbor as ourselves. The blessing over food in the prayer book, that families use, that's in the prayer book, it ends, that little short blessing ends with this petition: and make us ever mindful of the needs of others. In daily morning and evening prayer in the prayer book, offices that we say 7 days a week, we always make this plea: let not the needy, O Lord, be forgotten, nor the hope of the poor taken away. The farmer in Jesus' story, who crammed all of his stuff into his buildings, said, "I have it made. I can take it easy. I'm going to have the time of my life." Really? Not in this story. God shows up, and God says to him, "Fool, tonight you die. And who's going to get all of your stuff?" That's what happens when you fill your barn with self and not with God. Now, this farmer may very well have protested and say, I believe in God. But when it came to managing his life, he missed a very significant point: that life itself is a gift from God. God has called us into being. God has created us to live with God and for God. And the way this farmer managed his life, the way he hoarded his possessions and planned for the future, in doing that, he acted as if he, rather than God, was the ruler of life. So the story ends with this line: that's what happens when you fill your barn with self and not with God. This is a tough lesson, isn't it? It's tough. But you know, I kind of look at it this way. It's like a splash of cold water on your face when you get up in the morning. It can be a wake-up call. It can be a wake-up call.